Hello and welcome to another episode of the Daily Remedy Podcast. Today we're here with longtime friend of the show, Dr. Red Lahren. He is a well-known advocate for patients with chronic pain and those who have been disenfranchised by a healthcare system that often suffers more from injustice than actually benefits the patients themselves. Today we're here to discuss a recent complaint he has filed. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Lahren to explain the complaint and recognize its importance in the broader context for chronic pain patients.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Yashi. For those who don't know me personally, I've been knocking around the chronic pain communities now for something on the order of 27 years. I am not a doctor myself, at least not of medicine. I'm a doctor of engineering. And what I have tried to do is to help people in pain by giving them authoritative information concerning their own treatment, concerning what doctors believe about various disorders. I'm very active on social media, and I'm certainly very appreciative to Dr. Yashi for hosting us here on Daily Remedy. One of the things that's come to my attention and that I've grown deeply convinced of in the last 7 years is that pain patients and their clinicians are being deeply damaged by fundamentally misdirected policy on the part of the U.S. CDC, the Veterans Administration, and the Drug Enforcement Administration. And the policy that is of particular concern to me is that which pertains to the prescription of opioid medications for chronic severe pain and the regulation of practice that occurs under both the CDC with their published guidelines and with the enforcement policies of the USDEA. I have grown so concerned that I have deeply probed the CDC guidelines as they were published initially in 2016 and as they have been republished and greatly expanded, I might add, in 2022. And from that deep analysis and deep reading, I have grown convinced that the US CDC has committed not only error, but fraud. And by fraud, I mean they have misrepresented knowingly the facts behind and surrounding the U.S. opioid crisis. We're dealing here with people who are setting policy by meme, not by data. I have repeatedly corresponded or attempted to correspond with U.S. CDC, let's call them operators, or senior management. I've done it through multiple gateways, and I have been, to be candid about this, essentially not only disregarded but blown off. I have a record of 6 years of correspondence through avenues such as the Office of the Executive Secretary for CDC, the Board of Scientific Counselors for the National Centers for Injury Prevention and Control, CDC Info, which is a public access gateway to CDC staff. And in that correspondence, I have never once had a response on merit. So with that in mind, and with a long history of correspondence to patients, I decided to try to find an avenue for forcing a significant and serious-minded judicial review of grounds to believe that the CDC has been essentially guilty of massive civil rights violations under the Americans with Disabilities Act in one case, and in the other, essentially factual fraud by misrepresentation of the state of research that surrounds the CDC guidelines. I've recently filed complaints with the Office of Civil Rights in the U.S. Department of Justice and with the Office of the Inspector General, and particularly two key individuals within that office, plus administrative staff in the Department of Health and Human Services. Now, what we've got going on here, though, is something we all have to realize. Both of these organizations have a history of willful suppression of public input in favor of relying upon the supposedly but not actually considered opinions of the civil servant types who serve on the CDC senior staff. And these officials, frankly, have a record of demonstrable misinformation and policy distortions that goes back to at least 2012 that we can document and that I have documented in multiple publications in quite a number of places.
I apologize to cut you off, Dr. Lahorn, if you don't mind just speaking up just a little bit louder so that the audience can hear you a little bit more clearly. But I want to now turn towards the complaint itself. You mentioned that there were factual irregularities with the CDC that you believe had some intentionality behind it, that they were willfully disseminating false information. Can you elaborate on that?
Right. There's one particular article that is referenced in the complaint that readers may find very interesting as backup to the complaint itself. And that article has to do with official review, and I'm not quoting the title exactly here, but official review of the CDC guidelines, a process predestined to fail. This was published in a Journal of Nursing and Hospital Care. Now it's almost 2 years ago. And what the article documents is that the CDC knew certain realities about the practice of pain medicine that they deliberately ignored or actually factually suppressed in order to have something to say in a field where they are basically trying to overextend the charter of their organization into an area in which it has no business. And here's the evidence behind that claim now. The US CDC guidelines basically proclaim, and the senior US CDC management has proclaimed, that the prescription of opioids as such to people in pain is a major source of opioid dependence, opioid addiction, and death among patients. I have researched the literature going back 25 years and assembled the contradicting narrative here, and you'll see it referenced in the complaint when we publish that. What I have found is that the incidence of actual opioid overdose in clinically managed patients is so low and so subject to diagnostic errors that we can't accurately measure it. Literally, the people at CDC who proclaim there's a major risk of overprescription by doctors don't know what the heck they're talking about. And they don't care enough to do the research or to confirm my research. They simply refuse to engage on merit. So
you mentioned that a few times. Can you elaborate what you mean by engage on merit, meaning the response from the CDC, they lack merit? What does that mean?
The CDC has never allowed itself or required itself to review in depth the protocols of the studies that they quote from as justification for the positions they take in their guidelines. Let me give you a good example of this now. It's another dimension of this issue. There is a recommendation in the CDC guidelines, both 2016 and 2022, that non-opioid therapies are preferable to opioid therapies in the management of chronic severe pain. that is an outright recommendation. It's well documented in the published work. But they reference, interestingly enough, one basic study that was done by the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. It was published in 2008, either 18 or 19, and then republished a year later with some expansions. It was a study, it was a systematic outcomes review of non-pharmaceutical, non-invasive therapies for pain. When you go into that 1,000-page document, you learn certain things that the agency deliberately obscured in their report of results. One of the things you find out is that they surveyed 5,000-plus published reports and trials of non-opioid and non-pharmaceutical therapies for about 10 categories of pain. When you look carefully at the appendices, what you learn is out of those 5,000, only 220 survived a quality review. 220 out of 5,000. And not one of those 220 actually compared opioid therapy against non-opioid therapy on an either-or basis. Not one. Moreover, when you look at the appendices that describe the trials that they actually examined and read, what you find out is that those published 220 or so trials never define explicitly what usual and customary treatment for pain is, which it frankly is opioids. But they never define it in the AHRQ publication. And moreover, they explicitly identify the trial's evidence in over 150 out of those 220 reports as weak. And they indicate that the actual level of improvement that was observed in the trials that they looked at was about a maximum of 2 levels on a scale of 10. But none of those qualifications was addressed or even considered in the CDC narratives when they published the guidelines.
So now we're at the point where we are filing the complaint to the OIG, other federal watchdog agencies. What are the next steps?
Well, there are several that are underway. And one of them is going to involve a paper that you, Jay, are going to be publishing shortly, and I think basically with this podcast. The complaint has been filed. I am now publicizing that complaint in social media and making it available so that others may read it, and it will be available in the article that you're going to publish. I am also distributing that article to the legislative directors and legislative assistants of U.S. congressmen who have the power to convene hearings on these issues. I am going to be distributing it this week, that's to say the complaint itself this week, to the legislative directors on the House Subcommittee on Health, the House Ways and Means Subcommittee on Health, the Senate Judiciary Committee, and probably one or two others. It will also go to a list of the reviewers of the CDC guidelines and to the Office of the Executive Secretary of CDC. It has already been sent and reminded to the Office of the Inspector General at the Department of Health and Human Services. So basically what we're doing here, and I want to add to this, it's not just me. There's a group of 10 of us who represent literally hundreds of years, and you are one of those 10. There's a group of 10 of us who are filing this complaint, and you can find us, and we're a little bit hard to find by a Google search, but we're out here. We are the Speakers Bureau of the National Campaign to protect people in pain. It's an informal organization. We're speaking on behalf of millions of people who are being denied pain care. And we're hoping to mobilize those people to endorse our complaint with the Department of Health and Human Services. So what we will be distributing through your venue and referencing to a wide audience in social media and other platforms is kind of an action plan. It says, here's the complaint that we filed on your behalf. And here are email addresses that you can send a note to. At least we hope you can send a note to in your own name to endorse the complaint. What we are trying to do with this is to make the formal complaint unignorable by making it so visible in social media that somebody's going to have to sit up and essentially smell the coffee and say to themselves, maybe we had better look at this a little more carefully. The complaint itself has over 20 references in it. Some of those are to my work. Some of those are to the work of other people that reinforce my work and reinforce the complaint itself. What those references demonstrate and what the references within them demonstrate is that CDC has both violated civil rights and committed fraud. And they need to be brought up really, really, really hard and short. The CDC guidelines need to be publicly repudiated, and the repudiation needs to be announced to every state medical board and attorney general office in the United States. The CDC literally must be forced to admit to their errors and withdraw from this realm of public policy, and it may take legislation to force that. That's one. Two, the U.S. Veterans Administration has also published guidelines that were strongly derivative from the U.S. CDC's. The VA and the Department of Defense guidelines on prescription of opioids implement a policy that is even worse than the CDC's because that policy basically comprises no patient will receive any opioid medication for any reason throughout their respective system. That is not only draconian, it is such a profound misdirection that it should be criminal. And with the VA finding out who the hell to talk to, pardon my French, who the heck to talk to say, hey guys, you messed up so royally that you should either resign or hire a very, very good lawyer. Because you messed up in areas that can be documented. Now, let me add
one. We have the documentation, we have the email threads, and now we have this complaint. For supposed listener who wants to get involved and then endorse this, in the complaint and in the articles, there's a templated section where they can essentially use the verbiage provided to then submit an endorsement of the complaint. Can you talk a little bit about how we can endorse your complaint?
Sure. The article, as you're going to publish it, and as it will be referenced in a great many other sources, sets down the complaint itself, and then at the end, it has a section that I will read to you very briefly now, I want to be sure I get this exactly right. At the end of the article, I've identified the email addresses of a man by the name of Christian Schrank, who is Deputy Inspector General for Investigations in DHHS, Juliet Hodgkins, who is Principal Deputy Inspector General, and two administrative assistants whose emails I have verified. And what we're recommending is that you send these people, all four of them, with a blind copy to me with my address, it's lawhearn@hotmail.com, an endorsement of the complaint itself. And here's something you can use as a template. You could add your own story if you wanted to, but I would advise against it because that length will very likely not be read. So here's an endorsement. This email is to endorse the May 2024 formal complaint of Richard A. Lawhorn and the Speaker's Bureau of the National Campaign to Protect People in Pain against employees of the Department of Health and Human Services who wrote and approved the 2016 and 2022 CDC opioid prescribing guidelines. Please expedite investigation and adjudication of this complaint, and then provide your name, your qualifications, if you have any. For instance, if you happen to be an MD or a bachelor's in nursing or an RN, or if you're a chronic pain patient or a family caregiver or an advocate in your own behalf, indicate your qualifications to make the endorsement. Provide your city and state and email address in the body of that endorsement email. Now, there is something to be aware of here, and this is likely going to become an issue because it has in the past. Senior officials at DHHS do not want to hear from you. They do not want to hear from anybody. And in fact, I've been informed by the legislative director of my U.S. congressman that at the time I talked to him, U.S. Congress had lodged 1,500 complaints and action inquiries with DHHS, which they knew they were not going to get any answers at all to, in well over half of them. And in the others, there would be many cases where the complaint would essentially, or the response would be essentially dismissive. DHHS regards itself as an authority to itself and of itself, not subject to regulation or oversight unless by actual law. Getting a law passed is quite a process in the U.S. Congress, especially if it's on a subject of significant controversy. And let's face it, the opioid crisis in America is one of significant controversy and disinformation. One of the things I have already done on this is I've taken a brief notification and filed it with the public gateway of the Executive Office of the U.S. President and asked that it be forwarded to the staff members of both the President and Vice President and to the Executive Office of, the Office of Drug Control Policy, which is a group within the Department of the Executive. And it notifies this complaint and basically says, you folks really ought to go talk to DHHS and tell them what is the status of this complaint and when are you going to resolve it? So far, I haven't had anything back from that. But it has, after all, just been a couple of days, and we have a holiday weekend here. So we're going to be doing this over and over for a while. And the article that you are publishing, Jay, will be notified over and over and over and over again until Congress gets tired of hearing it and says, maybe we ought to look into this. If they do, the 9 or 10 members of our Speaker's Bureau are available at almost any schedule to brief the anyone who wants to hear it, literally. And there are published materials on my Facebook page and numerous other places that we can reference. I've done a briefing, as a matter of fact, for another social media platform, and this is not to overshadow yours by any means. It's one that's very familiar, however, to journalists and to writers in this field. It's called Kevin MD.
It's a great
outlet. Kevin MD is the most widely read healthcare newsletter in America, and it's published by a gentleman by the name of Kevin Foe. And he does a really bang up good job of trying to get various opinions out there that are pertinent to American healthcare today. That publication is widely read by journalists. And what I did was to put together a 22-minute briefing that's pinned to the top of my Facebook page. You can find me on Facebook very easily, and you can find the link to Kevin MD very easily, and you will be able to find the link to your publication very easily, because it'll be right on top of my profile. Just look up Red Lawhorn Facebook, and I pop up immediately in any kind of a Google search. But what we're basically encouraging people to do, and I'll bring this back in now to bottom lines, if you will. We're saying there is a complaint. Read it. Don't just endorse what we have to say because we're saying it. I mean, let's face it. We're going to have to establish credibility here. So read the document. Compose an email to the key executive figures that are identified in the complaint. Send it with a copy to me or to Jay. And let us know if you get a bounce message. It's entirely possible, and I've seen this happen, and I published on the subject, it's entirely possible that what they will do is they will say, oh, no, 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 we don't want to hear this. And when they do, they can, and they have in the past, set up the email server so that mail going to the key figures we've identified will be trashed without notification. That's what HHS does when they hear something that they don't want to hear. Now, we're gonna break that logjam, but we need you, those who are viewing this podcast, to help us do it. We need you to test the system and to send emails at least once. And you don't have to do this umpteen times because we don't want to have you accused or us accused of letter bombing the organization. Letter bombing, if you haven't heard of it, is the practice of sending so many emails that the mail server breaks down. We don't want you accused of spam or of phishing or of anything else that could be conveniently used to discredit you and to discredit the complaint. But we want you to raise such an unholy ruckus that the Department of Justice and the Department of Health and Human Services can no longer ignore the issue. So that, in essence, is, if you will, in a nutshell, is what we're encouraging viewers of this podcast and readers of the associated article to do. So let me turn this back to you, Jay, and have you sum up or add to what you believe is appropriate.
I just want to leave a few concluding words for those listening. Dr. Lahern Red, as he's affectionately known, is one of the most tenured advocates in the space of chronic pain and has so much credibility and so much insight and wisdom into this space that him filing this complaint is a great step forward. I understand many people may feel frustrated with the lack of response from local, state, and federal legislators. A complaint has the power to compel action because a complaint not responded to then creates a liability framework. So by submitting this complaint, essentially we are moving the needle forward and testing the bounds by which we can get a response from the federal government. And I think this is a great step forward, and I would strongly, strongly encourage all of you to read the complaint, endorse it if you truly believe in it, and make sure that your voices are heard, because these complaints have the power to compel action. And by endorsing that, you are enforcing your perspectives, your experiences in ways that we haven't been able to before.
I appreciate that, Jay, and thank you very much for hosting me on this.
No problem. Thank you for your time, and we'll be in touch. All right.